නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ As you all know, we were discussing Moggallana Sanyukta. We came discussing several aspects, starting with the first jhana, then second, then third, and then the fourth. Basically the material jhana and how Venerable Moggallana went through that practice. Say for example, when he was practicing first jhana, he had certain discrepancies, certain shortcomings, and then Buddha intervened and helped him, and Buddha actually intervened and asked him to be diligent and to avoid any kind of sensual thoughts, images, which is not, or which is detrimental to the first jhana, and accordingly Venerable Moggallana was able to practice diligently, and ultimately he was able to perfect it. So similarly he went on to the second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and then we even discussed the arupa jhana, that is boundless space, akasananchayatana, then boundless consciousness or limitless infinite consciousness, vijnananchayatana, and then the nothingness, akinchanyayatana, and ultimately the nevasanya nasanyayatana, the neither perception nor non-perception. So every time there were some issues, and every time Buddha intervened and he pointed out what is the issue, and then Venerable Moggallana accepted his advice and was able to overcome that issue and ultimately make things perfect. And then again and again, by the way, he recalled how Buddha helped him, and when he is preaching all this Dhamma later, being an Arahant, to the other monks, he is telling, okay, if someone is talking about the Venerable who has the sympathy or who has the advantage of having direct contact with the Buddha and intervening him and basically giving him instructions, accordingly correcting his practice, and ultimately being a great monk. So it is for me, actually it can be said, because Buddha has helped me, Buddha has advised me again and again. So when I was practicing jhana, and ultimately I was able to perfect them. You know that Venerable Moggallana is the foremost in the psychic powers, so he is the master in jhana. So therefore during that mastery, Buddha again and again helped him, Buddha again and again showed him the path. And then we later moved on to the other sutta called Animitta Sutta, where Venerable Moggallana explains about his vipassana practice. Actually so far we were discussing samatha, but the animitta samadhi or signless concentration is actually a product of vipassana. So one has to practice impermanence thoroughly to understand impermanence, then only as a result of that one may be able to attain signless. So we discussed that last week. So how one would attain signless concentration, and there we talked with the Chula Sunyata Sutta. So one may start with some kind of fragile level of animitta samadhi. So one may not be able to immediately make it perfect. Rather what happens is you may do your vipassana practice, probably assume that you are doing Vedananupassana. So different feelings are arising and you are able to keep your attention very quickly to each and every feeling and observe their nature, and assume that you are able to recognize how quickly they are arising and passing away. So more your attention refines, more your clear comprehension improves, so more thoroughly you may understand how impermanent they are, how transient they are, how quickly they arise and pass away. So as you continue your practice, there may be a state where you are unable to recognize whether it is a pleasurable feeling or painful feeling or equanimous feeling, because before you taking any trace, it will pass away. It's very quick, very speedy passing away. As a result of that, what happens is you are unable to pick the signs, unable to know the tone, whether it is pleasurable, painful or equanimous. So everything is very much like very transient. So there you reach to a state where something is arising and passing away, where you can't record, trace, whether it is a equanimous feeling or painful feeling or pleasurable feeling. Now we are losing the detail, we are losing the nimitta, the signs, the marks, and that ultimately helps the mind to get liberated, helps the mind to get released. Because we are being tangled in nimittas, we are being tangled in the signs. So till that, actually what we have is a nimittanusari vijnana, a type of a consciousness which is associating always a some sort of a sign. When we are looking at something through our eyes, actually our mind get tangled with those signs and marks. When we are hearing certain sound, again our consciousness get tangled with those signs and marks available in the sounds. Similarly, the smells, tastes, tangibles and the thoughts. So mind get tangled with all these signs, marks. But now, since we are unable to pick the signs, since they are quite transient and again they are quickly passing away, so then mind ultimately let go of all the signs, picking up of the signs, and ultimately temporarily released. So as we discussed, this temporary release is not lasting for a long time. Again you may drop back and start picking the signs. But anyway, this process happens again and again during the vipassana practice. So you may feel some sort of a difference. You are reaching a certain stage and the mind stop picking up signs and you feel like you have lost the domain or you have kind of disoriented. So you get this kind of a different feeling. And there, as you continue the practice, maybe with the instructions of the teacher, then you may be able to recognize, okay, this is a possibility. As you continue the vipassana practice, the mind reaches a state where it's no more catching the signs, rather it simply stops, simply be freed, or simply stop any kind of an attachment, any kind of an association with any of the objects. So there we can say, okay, you are simply experiencing signless in a momentary level, maybe for a few minutes or say a few seconds, and maybe as a result of your continuous practice, you may be able to enhance it, keep it for a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So likewise, we need to extend it so that you are able to understand, okay, now mind is not associating any objects as such, doesn't have any sign, doesn't have any marks. So mind is very clean, very transparent, very clear. So you understand, okay, now the mind is associating what we call signless state. We can say signless concentration. So as we touched last week about this phenomena in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, so at the beginning what we are experiencing is a little very short, fragile kind of a signless state. But later, as a result of the practice, now you may be experiencing a fairly a stable concentration. Still it's a type of a concentration. So you may feel like concentrated, you are feeling like you are in a deep state, no signs, and mind has stopped. Important thing is there is no object either. You can't find out where the mind is established, it's fully unestablished, and the mind is still open, awake, you are not sleeping either. So these kind of salient features we can recognize in the signless state, where there are no signs, no object, no grasping, and say there is no tension, and you are basically mindful in the present moment, but still at some degree of concentration. Now the practice is actually to understand So this is also impermanent. So this signless concentration is also impermanent. So Buddha highlights that in the Chulasunyata Sutta, Ayampiko animitto cheto samadhi abhisankato abhisan chetaito. So this very signless concentration is a conditioned phenomena. It's a conditioned and volitionally produced. So you had your own practice. You were able to continue your vipassana practice, and that was the conducive, say, characteristic or reasons for you to produce this signless state. The moment that you lose signless state, again you need to practice vipassana so that you regain the signless state. So likewise, it is still conditioned, still volitionally produced. But now we are taking it for our advantage to recognize the defilement. So why we lose signless state? So while you are dwelling at the signless state, so why are we again picking certain signs? Why we are going through certain thoughts again? Why certain defilements are again arising? So that is because of the asavas. That is because of the influxes. Now, in order to overcome influxes, so we are using this process. So we are being in the signless state, which is very, say, almost a type of a pure consciousness. But because of the influence of asavas, again we get certain impediments. Again we get certain signs. Again mind start thinking. Certain thoughts are there. Now we are tracing them. Very subtle thoughts, very subtle signs, very subtle marks, very subtle mental images, which are very much like, appear like impurities to this very clean mind. And we are able to trace them, recognize them, slowly let them go. Again, we are back in the signless state. Again, mind become very clean and clear. So this process has to be continued again and again. And typically, say, as you continue, you are able to prolong the signless state. Maybe you are able to stay in signless state for half an hour now as a signless concentration. So that is one side you are developing. And on the other hand, defilements become weaker and weaker. Now with less effort, you are able to achieve signless state. Now previously you are very much like thoroughly, you have to be precisely with the vipassana process, then only you are able to achieve signless state. But now defilements are very much like reduced, weakened, so you are able to achieve signless state without much effort. And as you continue the practice, this signless state become very much like registered in your practice, registered in your mind. And even without vipassana practice, now you are able to achieve it. You can quickly jump into it. You can simply plunge into that state. And because it is very much like an available state of the mind, so you are very familiar with it. Now, as we are continuing this whole process, so there are certain areas now we can look at. So one thing is, the yogi can become somewhat heedless. So this is a kind of a bottleneck, or this is a kind of a danger in the practice. So something has happened to Venerable Chittahatti Sariputta. This is a very interesting story. I am just taking only one part of it, which is relevant to this animitta state. So this Hatti Sariputta is a monk who is not yet elder monk, but a young monk, but was able to achieve signless state. Unfortunately, he is still unable to make it very stable, but still he is kind of quick wit, and when other elder monks are talking and when they are having a deep discussion, this Venerable Hattisariputta again and again interrupt. So that discussion, and in that discussion there was the great Arahant Venerable Kottita, and Venerable Kottita warned Hattisariputta, telling Venerable, don't do it. You need to stay quiet. You need to wait till you get your chance. So don't interrupt. This is a kind of a very interesting phenomena, because sometimes when our defilements are not yet fairly weakened, we are so much enthusiastic, or we are little restless, and we can't keep ourselves very quiet. Instead, we want to quickly interrupt, we want to quickly intervene. We can't maintain silence. So the thoughts arising in our mind compel us to talk. So that means still we are not yet very having a kind of a stable mind, a serene type of mind. Rather, these mental hindrances again and again popping up, making us to intervene. So same thing has happened to Hattisariputta. Anyway, Venerable Kottita has warned him. But in the audience, there were friends of Venerable Hattisariputta, and they were telling to Venerable Mahakottita, Bante, this Venerable Hattisariputta is a capable monk. He is diligent in his practice, and he is capable of participating in this discussion. And anyway, Venerable Kottita denied. He simply said, you can't judge a monk like that. Even though he has certain understanding or certain practice, still he is unable to maintain it. So Venerable Kottita has seen it through his mind. Even though Venerable Hattisariputta actually has attained even the signless state, he is unable to keep it. Now later what happened? So Hattisariputta keep on dealing with the monks and the other lay people, kings and ministers and all that. He too much become socialized, and ultimately he distraught. So this is a kind of a downfall to him, and again it's a kind of a perversion happens in one's mind. Now it is mentioned like this: sabba nimittanam amanasikara animittam ceto samadhin upasambajja viharati. So labimmi animittassa ceto samadhissati sansatto viharati. Now he appreciate what he has. Now I have earned signless state. Now he become heedless, because he thinks now everything's done, or I am really a competent monk now. So that's why I am participating in this elders' discussion, and I am intervening, interrupting, and I am able to sort of give my ideas. So I am also a capable monk now. So one can become somewhat conceited, and that helps to intervene with others, deal with others, move with others, and you lose your time to practice, and you become somewhat even kind of big-headed. Ultimately the balance will be collapsed, and this monk has disrupted. So then the other monks actually came to Venerable Kottita and asked, Bante, how did you know that Venerable Hattisariputta going to disrupt? Has any deities informed you, or have you known by yourself? And then Venerable Mahakottita say, so I noticed it, I have understood it by myself, and again the other deities also has informed me. This is a very interesting story for us also to understand. Even though we practice vipassana, even though we are able to gain animitta samadhi, still we can't say, okay, I am completely a competent, completely a stable monk. Still there may be defilements. So that's why we have to be quite grounded and become quite humble, because these states can make us little conceited, either samatha practice or vipassana practice, particularly samatha practice actually. So those information I haven't mentioned you, so we'll take this Hattisariputta Sutta at a later time completely to discuss that Hattisariputta Sutta. But I am taking only the signless concentration part just to take some advice. So Venerable Mahakottita is saying, even this signless state is not something that you can simply depend on, because still you are not come to the level of arhantship. Still some possibilities there are for downfall. So that is one thing I need to highlight. So when one is practicing vipassana, even if you are at the signless state, you need to be careful, you need to continue the practice, again and again look at the mind. So how these subtle defilements are arising, how certain signs are again picked up, how the mind again can become associating signs, because still the asavas are there, influxes are there. So till we are completely rid of all the influxes, we can't say we are very sure or very, very safe. Still there is a possibility of downfall. So that is one area to highlight. But anyway, so practicing signless state properly is a must. So practicing it again and again, seeing the defilements again and again, and even the subtle defilements again and again, is an advantage of signless state. Because signless state is very much like you are having a very clean state of mind, very much like a pure white color board or white color canvas. Nothing is written there. So even slightest impurity you can easily notice. So similarly in the mind also, when you are associating signless state more and more, you may be able to understand even a little sign when it's picking up, even a little mental image when it is appearing, even a little thought when it is arising. Because mind is very pure, mind is very clean. Any subtle defilement is easily traceable. That's the main advantage of signless state. That's why it is Buddha recommend it to overcome the subtle defilements, including the asavas, including the anusayas. And there is one sutta called Rahula Sutta. There Buddha recommend or advise Venerable Rahula, Animittancha bhavehi mananusaya mujjaha. So you need to develop animitta, the state of signlessness. And as a result of that, you are able to overcome mana. You are able to overcome conceit. Because conceit, as you know, is a very subtle defilement which lasts till one becomes an arahant. And very difficult to trace. Easily we get trapped in it. We get easily tangled in it. We've been deluded in it. Because it's a very, very subtle defilement. But we can see the signless state is capable of showing it even. Whenever a subtle conceit happens, whenever some sort of a comparison happens, talking me as a person and another external person, comparing two, I am good, I am better, or I am inferior, or you are good, you are better, or you are inferior. So some sort of a comparison. They are actually, we are deludedly preparing a self at our end, and as well as the other end. You are taking things into a personal level. So likewise, so the conceit is actually operating in a very subtle way, but it is also possible to trace when we are developing a signless state. So more and more you develop signless state, so more and more mind become purified. More and more the asavas become less and less. And how Buddha mentioned that in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, so there he highlight kamasavapi chittam vimuchyati, bhavasavapi chittam vimuchyati, avijjasavapi chittam vimuchyati. So the kamasava, the mind is liberated from the taint of sensual desire. Mind is liberated from the taint of being. Mind is liberated from the taint of ignorance. Now these are the subtle influxes. Now how one can know whether the influxes are fairly abandoned? So there is little information available here. So when you don't have this influx of sensual desire, sensual desire related sanya, sensual desire related perceptions or marks, signs, can't appear in the mind. Ye asu dharata kamasavam paticca te idana santi. And similarly, sunyamidang sanyagatang kamasavenati pajanati. And you may be able to understand all the signs which are, you know, being a hindrance to the mind, being a burden to the mind, again and again come and interrupt the mind because of the sensual desires. But now those are not coming. you are no more being interrupted by the sensual desires. Your clarity of the mind or your serenity of the mind is intact, very, very pure, very, say, maintained without any interruption, because the karma server is abandoned. So till we have karma server, again and again we may get the sensual desire. Again and again we get interrupted. Sensual desires are coming, maybe, say, you may remember what you have done or your own plans, some lustful plans, so how you are having certain intimate relationships. So all that sensuality related, very either sexual or sensual, very subtle mental images, sensuality related various imaginations, fantasies can appear in the mind because the sensual desire is still there. But more we are able to overcome that, more we are able to purify the mind, so that the frequency may reduce. Assume that in the beginning, often that your mind get interrupted by sensual thoughts and those sensual related images, but now it is less. So you are able to maintain the clarity of the mind, you are able to maintain the serenity of the mind, calmness of the mind, without much interruption coming from the sensual desires. So that's an indication, okay, to some extent the influxes are reduced. But still there may be intense situations, okay, again certain, all of a sudden you might remember something or you accidentally meet someone, again the old desires might arise. So that's why we need to be careful. We can't give a certificate immediately. There are people who have practiced even the Samatha meditation, and because of the power of the concentration, so they don't come across any lust, any anger for a long time. But the moment that you stop your practice, again those defilements start reappearing. So that's the hard part. That's why we can't immediately judge the situation. That's why we can't immediately give a certificate to a person, okay, you are a non-returner, you are a Sakadagami, you are a Sotapanna, because all these are very difficult to assess. So we have to be very careful, we have to be honest, well grounded, and again we have to deal with others, then only depending on the difficult situations we can understand where we are. Otherwise simply we are being alone, no interruptions, no associations. And we might overestimate ourselves, thinking, okay, I am an arahant now, I am an unreturner now, because the circumstances are not there. But the moment you go to a supermarket, you deal with the other people, again the thoughts, again the sensuality related thoughts might appear, again you get lustful thoughts, so that indicates the influxes are still operating. So that's why we have to take the advantage of association with other people. And how, while we are associating, we need to observe the mind, how it is reacting, how it is sort of behaving amidst all these different situations. And again, the mind has to be kept at a surface level. It is not at a deep concentrated level, rather at a shallow level. We need to keep the mind so that in case there are defilements, there are, say, potentials, they may popping out. You know that latent tendencies are, if they are there, if we apply a strong concentration on top of that, then they can't operate. They may not come out. But if we are simply maintaining the mind at a surface level, at a very relaxed state, when possibilities are there, so the latent tendencies may activate, so they may come to the surface like a thought, like a sankhara. Now we are able to trace it. So the recommendation is not the deep samadhi, rather maintaining the mind, a kind of a continuous mindfulness with a very good clear comprehension. You are very vigilant with a very clear mind. Instead of a samadhi, now you have a clarity of the mind, kind of a samahita state. Your mind is very clear, very clean. You are developing more and more signless state. And even a subtle sign, whenever it appears, you can easily trace it. So similarly, the other asavas are slowly abandoned. So various desires coming towards the future ideas, futuristic events, and future birth, future events. So all those bhava tanha related, that means the desire to become related thoughts, those images, those imaginations, have to be slowly abandoned. So more and more you are satisfied in the present moment. More and more you are settled in the present moment. Avijjasavati pajanati. Avijjasavati sunyamidang sanyagatang avijjasavenati pajanati. So more and more we are able to overcome the avijjasava, which is the avijja asava, particularly helps to have some sort of a personality, a sense of I. So very, very subtle. Maybe confirming the presence of a self. All that actually has a fair relation with the avijja. All that has to be slowly abandoned. So ultimately, you might not be able to trace a making of an I, or making of a self, making of a personality. Now, there are certain other suttas which are supporting this side, so we will take them later. So Venerable Ananda says it is quite obvious. Venerable Ananda, he explains it, telling like when the influxes are completely abandoned, it is so obvious that one may be able to easily know it. So since we are still in the process, we don't know, but Venerable Ananda assures, okay, while you are doing the whole thing, when the all asavas are abandoned, you should be able to properly know it, easily know it. Anyway, now that is the part coming from the Chulasunyata Sutta. And interestingly, so this signless state, more and more you need to develop. The more you develop, the consciousness may not take any of the signs now. Now, there's an interesting statement coming in the Nissaraniya Sutta, in Anguttara Nikaya. If someone is telling, Animittahi ko me cheto imutti bhavita bahuli kata yani kata vattu kata anuttita parichitta susama radda, atacha paname nimitta anusari vinyanam hoti. So, I have developed Animitta Samadhi, bhavita, I have developed it, Bahuli kata, I have made it abundant. Yani kata, I have made it very much like my own vehicle. Vattu kata, I was very much like based on that now. Anuttita, again and again practiced. Parichitta, make it quite proficient in it. Susama raddha, again and again undertaken it. But my mind still associate nimittas. So this is impossible. So that's the argument made in this sutta, in Nissaraniya Sutta. I am taking only the one part of it. So there he should be answered like this. Nahi sadhu bhagavato abhakkana. You should not disparage the Buddha. You should not misrepresent the Buddha, because still your practice is not perfect. That's why your mind is still taking the signs. So, for it is not good to misrepresent the Blessed One. The Blessed One would certainly not speak in such a way. It is impossible and inconceivable, friend, that one might develop and cultivate the signless liberation of mind, make it one's vehicle and basis, carry it out, consolidate it, and properly undertake it, yet one's consciousness could still follow after marks. There is no such possibility. For this, friend, is the escape from all marks, namely the signsless liberation of the mind. Nissaranang hetang avso sabbanimitta nang yadidang animitta cheto imutti. So now we are talking animitta cheto imutti. You need to notice that difference. Animitta cheto imutti is the full liberated mind. We can say one has achieved the arahantship, and it is not the signless concentration here. But signless concentration is the one slowly, slowly evolving, slowly, slowly expanding to the amount of signless cheto imutti. complete signless liberation, Animitta Cheto Vimutti. So when one achieve Animitta Cheto Vimutti, so your consciousness, vijnana, can't associate or pick any signs at all. It is maintaining the what we call the unestablished and non-manifested state for long time. You know the anidassana state. Anidassana vijnana, probably you might have heard about it, where mind does not show any kind of artwork. Assume that your mind is very much like a white color canvas. What happened to us is that again and again, various artwork is being drawn in this canvas and we get trapped in them. We easily get attracted to them. We easily get deluded by them. For us, it becomes the truth, what is represented in the canvas, and we being fully fooled by it. But for the Arahant, so this canvas is merely a canvas. It's no more artwork being drawn there. Completely anidassana. Completely unmanifested. So the clarity of mind is retained forever. That's the case of the Arahant. But for us, again and again, our mind get contaminated. Again and again, our canvas being, stained, polluted. And we being fooled by it. So the name and form get tangled with the consciousness. That duality, what we call the interrelationship between consciousness and name and form. So that name and form is still present and again trapped in the consciousness. But for the Arahant, it's not happening because he has mastered the practice and he has achieved the complete liberation of the mind, complete signless liberation. That is actually the freedom of all the marks, all the signs. Now you can see that so Buddha and the other Arahants have achieved it, and particularly mentioned in this Nissaraniya Sutta, so the complete or escape from all the marks is the signless liberation of the mind. Nissaraniya is the sixth Nissarana. So Nisaranang hetang aoso sabbanimittanang yadidang animitta cheto vimutti. Some more detail are there. Probably we will stop here, and because it's a deep subject, and I like to get your input, and if you have any question, so please feel free to raise your hand. So we'll have a discussion and some more to discuss. And we'll continue that on next week as well. So I'll wind up the Sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. I have a written question here. But Bhante, do you have a question on your side?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the written question says, most respected Bhante, much merits for teaching valuable and interesting Dhamma sermon. Hatti Sariputta's story, can we consider it as an example to Dhamma Udacca? Bhante, could you please explain more about the meaning of Dhamma Udacca, please, there on Sunday?
Yeah, very interesting question. Now, Dhamma Udacca. So the literally meaning is that there is a certain restlessness in the mind because of the Dhamma. It also can happen because you can refer what we call Pansu Dohavaka Sutta. So there are a gradual abandonment of vitakkas are explained. At first you have vitakkas which are gross, which are more into the unwholesome side, kama vitakka, vyapada vitakka, vihinsa vitakka, the thoughts related to the sensuality, thoughts related to the, ill will, thoughts related to harming others. So those kinds of wrong type of thoughts are there. So we can easily understand that, okay, you abandon it. And later there are subtle thoughts, subtle vitakka. what we call, say, certain thoughts about the country, certain thoughts about the region, thoughts about your relations, your children, your parents, about your health, about gain, fame, and how you are going to help others. All these are subtle thoughts, don't appear like harmful, but still we need to abandon. So then again you can reach a very silent state of mind. But now the other part is coming out, that is the Dhamma Vitakka. Dhamma Vitakka Vasissanti, as explained in the Pansudovaka Sutta. Now thoughts related to Dhamma can come out. Because you are so fascinated about the Dhamma. You are so, say, faithful about the Dhamma, and you can experience the value of the Dhamma. Now you want to teach it, you want to explain it, you want to further understand it. So this is another type of a trap, because that also has to be abandoned. That is a kind of a restlessness arises in the mind because of the Dhamma. Now that thoughts also have to be abandoned, keep the mind in utter silence. So that is not easy actually. So we are not used to such a silence. So typically we go through some kind of inner chatter. Now because of the practice, okay, inner chatter is abandoned. But now time to time certain thoughts are coming. As a result of the practice, again we abandon it. And we are the people who appreciate the Dhamma, and now thoughts related to Dhamma is appearing, so that also have to be kept aside. Now, what happened to Hattisariputta could be one of that, because you know that he is interrupting the others without being silent when the elder monks are going through some, say, deep discussion. He can't simply keep silent. He also want to quickly participate and interrupt and, you know, put his ideas. So maybe certain kind of inner restlessness. And restlessness is also a defilement which is only abandoned at the stage of arahantship. And the other thing is the conceit. You know, as we practice, one possibility of developing conceit is there, particularly to the samatha. Say you achieved the jhana, particular jhana, and you see the other yogis still struggling and they are unable to practice, and maybe teachers are also sort of not happy about them, but you being the accomplished jhana meditator, and you can easily be conceited. So that is one area. In the vipassana also, in case if you are not humble, there could be a possibility of having kind of a conceit. Because you feel, okay, now I am free, now I am able to maintain the mind from, able to attain signless state, which Buddha has praised. And you be negligent right now, particularly the negligence. And there are certain situations like Buddha was reluctant to tell the achievements of the monks to them. Assume that a particular monk has become a sotapanna, but Buddha don't want to explain it to him. Buddha doesn't want to reveal it to him, because if he reveal it, that particular monk can become heedless. So that's the argument Buddha is making. I am not revealing it because this monk can be heedless, because he know now only a less things to do. I am free from the hell realm. I am sure that I'll be an arahant. Now things are very much like clear. So you now engage with various other activities, talking to the others, and lot of you become very busy, forgetting the practice. So therefore, at his early stages, Buddha didn't want to explain those lower stages of sainthood. Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, those things are not explained in the Sutta Nipata, for example. So it is particularly aimed at the arahantship. But later, as many monks are, you know, coming to the sasana, and some are unable to achieve the arahantship, and they still sometimes they pass away while being a sotapanna. And now the other colleagues are asking from the Buddha, Bante, what has happened to this venerable? Has he attained any kind of maggapala? And then Buddha has to say, yes, he is a sotapanna, he is a sakadagami. So likewise, Buddha has to explain these lower stages as well. So one thing is the heedlessness which can happen, because we think, okay, we are now done, we are capable and I am achieved, something like that. So therefore, I feel that is what has happened to Venerable Hatti Sariputta.
Thank you, Bhante. Next, I'd like to invite Nandana for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, I just want to ask you something about that, the one monk who said that how he is proficient in the signless state, how he practiced it over and over again, and a long list of things about how he practiced.
Yeah.
And then he said, finally, I still have signs. Right?
Correct.
And that is when it was said that you should not disparage Buddha by saying this and all that.
Correct.
So my question is based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, signless, the way I understood earlier was not taking up signs that are colored by greed, hatred, and delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do take signs, even in Arihatto, even in Buddha's, when you read the Buddha Sutras,
mm-hmm.
Now Buddha sees Venerable Ananda and he calls him by his name, mm-hmm. Ananda.
Correct.
Or he recognizes somebody. So that is taking up signs.
That's a interesting question. Now we can't say it is taking up signs, but still you can recognize. That's an interesting thing. Now you see, but your consciousness get not tangled in it. Ditte ditta matta. You still see, but your consciousness still remain clear without being mixed with it. So that is the case with the Arahant. Now what happened to us? Taking up signs means we again go and tangle with the sign. We again see it like a beautiful sign. This is a boy, it's a man, this is a woman, this is a beautiful woman. So like that we come to the, we objectify the sign. What we see is the sign, but we, rather than limiting it to a mere sign, we objectify it, we personify it. So that is where we go wrong. But the Arahant, so they also use the language, they also use the names, they also use the labels. But knowing they are merely labels, they are merely conventions, merely signs, but their mind is not tangled in it. They are not being deluded in it. So that's the difference, I feel.
Yeah. That's I think that kind of agrees with my understanding also, because I always made that distinction. Because even when we, in our practice also, when we meditate, and even in day-to-day practice, if you are in a very equanimous state of mind, if you are having, we have those moments where you kind of very, very short, brief periods of time that where you could see something, where you could hear something, you could, you know, sensually, through our senses,
mm-hmm.
we can perceive something. We can perceive, we can take a sign. This is a man, woman. But yet there can be, those signs may not necessarily be like what you described, like without any, you know, without making any sanskara based on
exactly
that.
You are not making any fabric.
Colored by any greed or any hatred or any delusion.
Correct.
I mean, see the object, hear the sound for what it is, rather than creating that entangle, right?
Correct. Now, actually, we can add the visankhara gatan citta. Now, when Buddha became enlightened, he mentioned one quality of his mind as visankhara gatan citta. So when certain phenomena are encountered, he doesn't add his own part. He doesn't add his own judgments to it. So there are no any fabrications. There are no any preparations. So they become mere sankhara, shuddha sankhara. So your own additions, your own judgments, biases are not included at all.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Because even Buddha himself he announced his next day's plans sometimes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To Venerable Ananda.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, now we are going to such and such village. Or
correct. Correct.
We are going here, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, sometimes he came up with strategies where when our monks didn't get any arms and there was that woman who was killed and. Then, you know, he came up with a study. He said, what if when we go to another village, if we don't get anything there also?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there was kind of, so all those things kind of point to the fact that, you know, they basically, they, I was trying to understand this, the word signless.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to understand it very literally.
Yeah, I think.
It's almost, it sounds like. You're not taking any signs at all, right?
That's what I feel like. Assume, I like to take it as a simile. Now, say you are wearing a spectacle. So, often you have to wipe it. Because again and again, stains come and stick with the spectacle. So, your vision being hindered because of those stains. So, again and again, you wipe it out so that again it becomes stainless. And it's become transparent. How about type of spectacle where there are no stains being, you know, sticked into it? Something like that. So I feel Arahant's mind is something like that. So the stains are not sticking to it.
Yeah, no defilements at all. Yes.
No defilements at all. So it's very much like quickly passing away, quickly dropping out. So they are not adhering to it. The spectacles are there, but continuously transparency is there. No impediments, no stains. The transparency is intact.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, Pandit, it's clear. Thank you very much, Pandit.
Yeah.
Theravansanai.
Yeah, Theravansanai. Have a question? Yeah, we have a question from our side. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Bhante. Mine is more of a it's a contribution more than a question. And I thought about this when we were talking about Hattisariputta, that monk who eventually disrobed.
But anyway, he again came back.
Oh, he came back.
That's another point to add. So ultimately now, when his friends reported to Venerable Kottitha, so Venerable Kottitha gave the explanation. And again after that, those monks again went to the Buddha also.
Mm.
And Buddha, and again he mentioned what has happened. They mentioned what has happened. So Hattisariputta has disrobed. Before he disrobed, this Venerable Kottitha has made the warning. Everything, the whole story was explained to the Buddha, and Buddha mentioned, he made a very interesting comment, even though he disrobed, later he will reflect about the advantages of the monkhood. So he later, even though he became a layperson, he didn't spend long time as a layperson, as a household life. Later he understood the advantages of the monkhood and he came back, he again became a monk. And he now thoroughly practiced without being heedless and ultimately became an arahant.
Well, that's very reassuring to know that he came back. But anyways, this troubled moment where he was feeling like, you know, he's accomplished and he has achieved so much.
Correct.
I remember reading from... Mahasi Sayadaw's Manual of Insight, and he said that when someone has attained so much, or someone has attained such a high state of this signlessness, they might start wondering, although I am dwelling in or I am abiding this signlessness for long periods of time,
mm-hmm.
how comes this latent defilement still arise from
Correct.
Time to time?
Mm-hmm.
And this yogi might start wondering, is there a place where these defilements are just stored up?
Uh-huh.
And if I can access that place, I know I can go and clear all of them.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But Master Sayadaw explains that these defilements, they're not stored up anywhere in the past or in the future. They are there only in that moment where they arise.
I see.
And you are heedless, there is moha, there is still the clinging and taking things as mine or beautiful or ugly.
Mm-hmm.
In that very moment where the defilements arise, that is where they are. They mm-hmm. are not somewhere where we cannot see them.
Right.
So that being heedlessness, being with ignorance, the moha,
mm-hmm.
that is the path that defilements see and they arise.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to...
Yeah, very interesting. So thank you for that comment. So as you said, now we get the wrong perception. Okay, this and when we are explaining also, we simply say latent tendencies,
mm-hmm.
right? Hidden tendencies. So that gives a wrong connotation, thinking, okay, they are hidden at some place,
mm-hmm.
at a particular very, very secret place. They are there. So it's, we get that wrong impression. But as you correctly mentioned, so when the circumstances are there, immediately that wrong or say past habit may pop up. So there we have to be very vigilant, very heedful, really mindful. Then only we can pick it. And rather than promoting that tendency, rather than promoting that habit, we need to simply let it go. Simply keep it aside. So that is the only way to, you know, that in when Buddha is explaining the Sabbasava Sutta, there he particularly mentioned Janato Bhikkave Passato Asavanam Khayang Vadami. No Ajanato, no Apassato. So when you see, when you know, then only you are able to overcome the influxes. So how are you going to know, how you are going to see? So when they are arising,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? So when they are arising, when they are coming to the, it's their activity. So when they are hidden, we can't trace them. But due to certain circumstances, they may pop up. They may become active. So at that moment, you have to be quickly be aware of it. Okay, step back. Simply watch it. Don't get fooled by it. Don't be a slave to it. Okay, you let it go. Because what is arising will pass away definitely. You don't need to worry about it. Because it's a rule. It's a characteristic. What is arising is passing away, that's the nature. So you simply step back, you don't get fooled by it, and that's it. You don't need to worry, very much like. So different methods you can apply. So being seeing how they are coming and going, seeing their impermanent nature, or you simply being dispassionate about them, or you simply dwell back in the emptiness. Likewise, many methods may be able to apply it so that that old tendency is not further strengthened. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we have another question. Yeah.
So, Anasa, sorry, I have a question. So, Anasa, then I want to know the relationship between Sanya and Sankara,
mm-hmm.
then the signless stage. Then as example in arahantship, then no any sankara, no sansa,
mm-hmm.
No any karma is being generated. Let's say the arahant sees something and he just see, then he is not entangled with whatever he is seen.
Mm-hmm.
So those things, so Swaminas, I want to know the relationship further about
yeah,
Sanya
yeah.
and Sankara.
Mm-hmm. So as we just discussed, so how he is going to recognize things without taking signs? Now say as when Mr. Nandana pointed out, now when Venerable Ananda is in front of the Buddha, so Buddha needs to know, okay, he is Venerable Ananda. So still certain amount of signs he may be associating, but without his consciousness being tangled in it.
Mm.
So that is one area. So what happened to us is that when we start taking the signs, we immediately personify them, we immediately objectify them, we immediately take thinking that these signs represent a person, represent an individual, represent an object. So that is where we go wrong because of our ignorance. So that you know that in this, in the Kalakarama Sutta, Datta Dattabbang Dittang Na Manyati. So for the Buddha, apart from seeing, there is no object he sees. Apart from seeing, the activity of seeing is there, but there is no object he sees. In the best form, it is explained in the Kalakarama Sutta. And the other thing is, he does not conceive thinking that I haven't seen it. Not seeing something, again you can conceive, again you can have manjana. He's not having any kind of wrong thinking, saying, okay, I haven't seen it. And again, he doesn't conceive telling, okay, I should see it. And on the other hand, he does not conceive telling, I am the one seeing it. Dattarang na manyati. You see, it's a very, very, very interestingly, very precisely Buddha points it out. So, at that level, at the external side, objectifying and saying that there is something, you are not conceiving. And not seeing, still you are not conceiving. Saying you should see, still you are not conceiving. And saying I am the one seeing it, still you are not conceiving. Still knowing is there. Knowing is there, but no conceiving, there is no I-based thinking, I-related thinking. That is one area. So when such capacity is there is no way to generate karma. Now karma is only generated intentionally. You being a person, okay, I want to kill an animal. Okay, I want to kill someone, I want to steal, I want to engage with sexual misconduct, whatever. So you act as a person. So that personality is very strongly present during the time of the action. Then only you are able to accumulate karma. But for the Buddha and the Arahants, so they don't have such a personality or view, personal sense of I, because it's completely abandoned. Asmimana is completely abandoned. So no more accumulation of karma. But still they operate. Still they are operating, they are talking, and you know, they are doing good things, but still no generation of the karma, no accumulation of the karma, because they still operate without feeling as a person. It's very difficult, I don't know, I mean, we are still trying to understand, because we are not Arahants, we are still trying to understand how this mind, when it is completely, utterly mindful, I mean, we can, probably a Vipassana yogi can have a little taste of it. You know, when your mind is undefiled, when you are not making a person, you are not feeling a sense of I, you still can operate. You are not sleeping, you still walk, you still eat, so you still talk, but you don't feel as yourself, as a strong person, as a myself, and you know, conceited or anything, but still you are talking, you are still eating, you are still driving, whatever. So not feeling as a I, sense of I, still the process can go on. So therefore that's the beauty I feel. So the sense of I is something external that we additionally included to this whole process. The process can continue without participation of a I factor. So that's a beautiful thing. I mean, say, we don't need to be an Arahant to understand it, I feel. While you are utterly mindful, while your mind is completely untangled, completely unassociated, completely unestablished, still you are walking. Say you are in the walking path, still you can see, still you can walk, still you can talk. But you don't feel a strong sense of I. But talking is possible. Something like that. Yeah. So those are the questions we have, Jennifer.
Okay, thanks, Pente. There's one more written question, which is, what is the connection to the silence of the mind?
Sorry? Can you repeat?
Yes, it says, what is the connection to the silence of the mind?
Silence. Silence?
Yeah, that's what's written.
Connection to the silence. We can say, okay, that's another way. Now, assume that how the silence being broken in the mind. So one thing we can say, okay, you are now talking. Internally, there's a little restlessness. You can't maintain inner silence. So you are compelled to talk. Certain thoughts are coming and you being trapped in it. You prepare a self and you feel very important. So this is my idea. I need to present it. Okay, you are being, triggered to talk. So before you talk it physically, the mind become talkative in a way. Mind become really restless and then you start talking. So this is how typically we talk. We react and then talk and all that happens. So not being able to maintain the silence. But suppose that you are not taking signs at all. Mind is remaining calm, very quiet, very clean. So you don't need to talk. You have nothing to talk. Now you may feel, okay, I have nothing to talk. I have no question. I'm enjoying the silence. So I feel there is a good relationship. But still, it does not mean that you are unable to talk. You know that Buddha has talked a lot. Buddha has preached a lot. So that's a very interesting statement made by Venerable Katukunda Jnanada Thero. So he says the Muni, the sage, is silent. Not only he is physically not talking, even when he is physically talking, still he is silent. So basically the mind is still silent, even though Buddha is talking. So Buddha's mind doesn't have any restlessness. His mind doesn't have any defilements. And it doesn't take, permanent signs, get tangled in the signs, but still he is talking, he is preaching. So those are very interesting areas, in a way, kind of aesthetic sides that we can actually look at. Even though this whole thing appears like very technical, so it is actually producing a lot of very beautiful aesthetic aspects to this spirituality. So how Buddha is preaching while keeping his mind silent? Very interesting, isn't it? So there is no any restlessness. Assume that he completed his teaching or preaching. Again, back to the pure silence. So his mouth is also closed. His mind is anyway closed in the sense, no any kind of a restlessness at all. Enjoying the silence. So his preachings are, in a way we can say, his preachings are coming from the silence. It's because his mind is silence and enjoying the silence, and preachings are coming from the silence. Okay, so there are no more questions from our side. Then we have spent a fair amount of time today also discussing Dhamma and preaching Dhamma. And all the merits what we have accumulated, we will share with all celestial beings, with all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand the Buddha's teaching and practice to the best of our ability. So we will do the traditional sharing of merits. Ittavitach amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe deva anumodantu samba sampatti siddhya. Ittavitach amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe bhuta anumodantu samba sampatti siddhya. Ittavitach amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe satta anumodantu samba sampatti siddhya. ఆకాశట్టా చ బుమ్మట్టా దేవానాగా మహిద్దిక పుణ్యంతం అనుమోదిత్వా చిరం రక్షంతు శాసనం. ఆకాశట్టా చ బుమ్మట్టా దేవానాగా మహిద్దిక పుణ్యంతం అనుమోదిత్వా చిరం రక్షంతు దేశనం. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතේනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සදං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු
Thank you, Bente.